Welcome to Who Knew? We are fans of the current series of Doctor Who, and here we discuss our likes, dislikes, and insights into the modern regeneration of the show. Subscribe, review, and listen to us on iTunes and Stitcher, or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast. All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com. You can leave comments there, or email us at WhoKnewPodcast@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram and Twitter account. Tweet at us at WhoKnewPodcast, and find us on Facebook. Today's episode is episode 10 of season 8, In the Forest of the Night. A forest appears out of nowhere. Not just in London, but all over the world. It's the most unexpected invasion ever. This episode is written by Frank Cottrell Boyce. It is directed by Sherry Folkson. It originally aired on the 25th of October, 2014, and was watched by 6.92 million viewers. Hi, this is Eugene. Let's introduce ourselves. Kelsey.
I'm first. I thought I was going to be last.
Just leave it at that. I'm first.
Hi, I'm Josh.
Hi, this is Brent.
Hey, it's Frank.
Hello, this is Auburn.
A little lost girl runs through a forest and sees the TARDIS. She knocks and, already knowing his name, asks the doctor for help. The doctor is more worried about the TARDIS not taking him to London. The girl says that they are in the middle of London. No, says the doctor, we are in the middle of a forest. She takes him outside, shows him Trafalgar Square, in the middle of a forest that covers all of London. Nearby, Clara and Danny are wrapping up a school sleepover in the Natural History Museum. They go outside with their class and discover the overgrown forest.
So I love the way this episode was shot with, like, I don't want to call it, it's not a fisheye lens, but it's a very wide angle lens at times for some gimmicks and stuff. Either they got a new lens and they just wanted to use it, or there's a lot of, it's very comedic. Most of the time when they use it, it's to kind accentuate a comedic vibe, or funny shots where his face is, or my favorite bit is when he points it at, I think, Maeve, and his finger's real big in the screen and it's her face, mm-hmm. or something like that. So, but they use it throughout. It wasn't like just, in the beginning or for certain things. So, but it really, punched up this episode for me. I loved it. Kind of cartoony in a good way, but I think it helped balance out. I think all the kids were good, but it was very kid, you know, there's a lot of kid energy in it. And I think it helped legitimize that because it was of the silliness. Mm-hmm.
I think that also helped. I find this episode to be a little bit claustrophobic because of being in the forest so much. So I think it also helped balance that. So I appreciate it.
The wide angle. Where you grew up, was there a lot of foliage? We can't remember where you.
Yeah, I grew up on the East Coast.
Yeah. Because I found that feeling comforting.
Interesting.
I did enjoy Maeve's, she just knows that the doctor's there. I found that very comforting as well. Mm-hmm. Going off of that, just that the doctor is here for help. And so she finds the police call box, reads the sign, and then knocks on the door knowing that that's the doctor.
And they have that skyline shot of London covered in foliage. And yes, there's a number of recognizable things in there, but I found it interesting. Like, it reads to someone who doesn't know anything about geography. I almost said geometry. It helps to, it's good for anyone who doesn't know geometry. It's done well enough to see, like, it's a city covered in foliage. But I don't think it has the impact on myself or us to see that skyline covered in foliage as would New York or Los Angeles or something like that.
Do people usually spend overnight at the museum?
It's a thing.
Is that something that classes have done? I have not.
Yeah, it's a thing.
I mean, there was a whole trilogy night at the museum.
Yeah.
And it wasn't with a lot of kids. It was a security guard. Come on.
Because, you know, you can't take them real camping anymore because, nature. But yeah, I've heard about it because when I first heard about it, I thought, oh my God, I would have loved that. Everybody else would have hated it.
Right. I like Maeve is saying that Clara sent her, but in her head. You know, so that was an interesting idea going, is Clara in danger? And then we go to the kids and it's like, Clara has no idea. Going back to what Josh was saying is, it is kid-centric, but that's one thing I did like about it. It did seem this is for the kids episode. For sure. Sometimes we're getting too adult oriented. So this was the kids episode and the kids are smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which was really nice rather than seeing some of the other ones we've seen who are just more annoying. These were more kids, but they picked up on a lot of things. Why is this red circle broader than all the other ones in the tree?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? What is this going on? It just seemed they were bringing up a lot of great points, and that I liked.
Mm-hmm. I agree with all of that. Yeah.
It definitely feels like a reset with the students. Like, it's not the students we've been seeing with Miss Danny and Clara.
And Courtney.
Yeah.
Who were portrayed quite unlikable in the past.
Yeah. These kids read a little bit younger to me. And also, like, the writing has changed to give them, like, more quippy, like, retorts and things. And not as much whiny, like, yeah.
And another thing I liked because of that, what you're saying, Auburn, is it's showing these kids used to be like that. And because of their influence of Danny and Clara, they're changing and growing. So they're letting themselves experience other things. Because they do the little flashback about, wow, he said, please. That's something he never would have said. And they show that.
And right.
At one point he goes, I can't handle my angles of management if this happens anymore. So he is growing it, which I really liked, showing that they are having an impact, a positive impact on these kids. And teachers are important into how they interact.
Frank, you once again called out my favorite line of the episode. I think I actually took a picture. I took a picture of my TV. What was it? When I get stressed, I forget my anger management.
Right. It was great. I liked it. And yeah, the filming of it is very different, but it's not all the way through it. So it's just the TARDIS, or is it Maeve's area that has
it? It's because he does it with the kid. It's basically when it needs to be funny. It's like they used it when it works. I think it might usually have to do, I mean, as I have it playing here in front of me, I'll keep an eye out to see if they use it any other times besides when kids are around. But I think when the kids are around is usually when the comedy's happening. So maybe it's just a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a great POV from Maeve's, you know, angle on the Doctor, especially when she's first entering the TARDIS.
And but I they like use it when you use it when they look at the Doctor too. And then later on, when there's one with the little girl and Danny, it's shot like that.
Yeah. So. I like the Doctor's line when she first comes in, and instead of the typical, it's bigger on the inside. He compares it to Coke. It's like a Coke bottle.
Yeah.
Like the bottle is this small, but there's this much sugar in it. Like, yeah.
I also like what he says. You're here to see a doctor. You usually have to have an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the writing of a lot of this. Even Maeve just going, well, I often get confused on things. I just stop saying things because people react so badly.
That reminded me of kids in general.
It was like, relatable.
Yeah, kids are probably confused most of the time. They don't. They're just like, well, life is confusing.
Or you know, when you're a kid, you make a decision on, oh, this must mean that, like what they're talking about, and then you kind of forget about it. And then you're an adult and you're like, wait a second, that doesn't mean that at all.
Going back to the Coke and the sugar, who pointed that out?
I did.
Auburn. You know, Jamie Oliver was, you know, huge, like in the early 2010s, the 2010s, the 2010s, you know, he was like making a lot of like policy changes in the British school system around sugar. And I remember around this time, like that was like the big thing that was being driven home, how much sugar is in not just Coke, but juices, flavored milks, like.
Yeah, I think if I was watching this as a kid, I would kind of gravitate toward this just because these are like my peers.
Mm.
And I think it's nice to see the audience that it's represented shown in a better light. Like I'm, because my first thought was, why don't we have Courtney back? But then I'm like, well, that's because she wasn't that good. And then these kids are better.
She was also older. She was considerably older than these kids.
Yeah, and I'm also thinking of, like, why did we spend all that time with Courtney? What if we had spent that time with Maeve or somebody else?
Yeah.
And then this was the end of their arc. It would have been so much more meaningful.
True, but they were trying to go somewhere with Courtney, I think, and they gave up on that. Something didn't work.
Yeah, and again, I think I've said this before, but it shows me that they didn't have the planning that I can think Russell had in his tenure as a showrunner, because he knew where to drop in all the Easter eggs, if you will.
Or maybe she was just in school and doing something she couldn't film.
Yeah.
I think I've asked this before, but I do remember talks of another spinoff with students.
Oh, Class.
Class, was this connected to these kids at all, or was it more like the Courtney kids? No,
Class is much older, or not much older, but older high school,
right?
Yeah, one of those, you know, 20 somethings playing teens,
right? Which is why I felt Courtney was more in that vein, right? Where these kids are like feel like they're playing more actual age,
yeah.
I would say, I don't know, they might be like 30 something British kids, like British actors,
they're a British 30, come on,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. The conversion doesn't work.
There's also that scene where they're taking selfies of themselves, and it's very digitized.
Yeah,
like earlier photographs on phones.
Well, last episode we talked about Missy and the iPad, and this one has a lot of. They look like iPhones to me from like
their they're definitely smartphones.
Yeah, when they arrive in London for the second time, and the TARDIS uses the tram voice. Like you have arrived at your destination. Has the TARDIS ever done that before?
I don't think so.
Okay. So it's just kind of a visiting London. This is what the underground does. Like it's the underground voice, right? Like I imagine that's what the trains.
That's what I took it as because you see that sign later on when they exit. But then now that we're talking about it in my fan fiction, the Doctor's like, no, we should be in London. And then he does it again and does it again. And then the TARDIS is like, we are in London. Yeah. Like, how do I tell you that?
The TARDIS was, you know, put up with it. It's like, okay, that's enough.
Be a little sarcastic. All right. I'll like that. I like that.
Clara phones the Doctor and tells her to come and get Maeve, the little girl. Clara and Danny lead the children through the forest and reach the TARDIS. Across the city, Maeve's mother gets on a bike and tries to find her daughter. The Doctor explains to the class that the trees grew overnight, and he believes that the fabric of time has been messed with. Inside the TARDIS, he finds Maeve's notebook containing drawings of a solar flare, and they realize that she is still outside in the forest, which is doubly dangerous because she's been hearing voices since her sister disappeared the year before. The Doctor believes that Maeve is the key to all this. They go to get her when there is a rumbling and Nelson's pillar falls over, narrowly missing them. Watching a government crew unable to light the trees on fire, the Doctor realizes that this has to be someone's plan. The natural order is turning against the planet, and as Maeve predicted in her drawings, a solar flare is heading to destroy everything. Dun dun dun!
Oh, I like the way that the Doctor appears to the class. He's kind of like in between us, the lion statue base and a tree.
It was so funny.
And I almost imagine that, like, I like to imagine that Capaldi, like, framed himself there, like, saw that and was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I'm just, like, in between, like, behind this tree?
I will tell you that that is consistent with this Doctor because he does the same thing in the episode, where they're in that orphanage and then they're talking to Orson Pink, the young Orson Pink, and then they turn around and the Doctor's like sitting in that chair that was vacant a moment ago.
That's right. And then she commented like, how long have you been sitting there? And he says something funny. One thing that kind of bugged me is really the only thing that bugged me in this episode was when Maeve's mother comes out with her bike and she bumps into that other woman. Like it seemed London seemed very unpopulated.
No, yeah.
You know, and I get how, why, you know, there's a lot of foliage, could be blocking and stuff like that. And I understand why it would be that way production wise, but it's London. It's the British New York. It's just, it felt weird that we only saw her bump into one other person.
Would you want to go out in that? What the heck is happening? And then, like Clara's saying, the paths are disappearing because everything's growing so quickly. I think anybody you don't stay inside. I am not going
out. I think there's plenty of British people who are as dumb as Americans who just go, oh, this looks dangerous. What's going on? And they walk around.
I think that
it felt empty.
I think that also contributed to like my feeling of that claustrophobia. Like there was no other people and it was all trees. And that was, I'm sure, in the intent because of what was happening. They did a great job, like always keeping stuff like foreground elements and then background elements. So you could, you know, you always felt like you were trapped in a way.
Yeah. or trees could have grown in places that people were trapped inside their domiciles. So maybe that's why.
And also people couldn't get anywhere. You can't commute. So you're not going mm-hmm. into the city. You know, some people, mm-hmm. yes, living in the city, but it's just like trying to get or even around the city. You yeah, have couldn't, blockages couldn't, everywhere.
Yeah, couldn't use your Oyster cards.
Right.
That would be a Metro card for us.
I knew that one.
I didn't even hear that. Or if I did hear about Oyster cards, I didn't know what it was. Why is that called that? Is there a...
Exactly. I at one point was told, I remember learning why they called their Metro the Oyster, or why they called Oyster cards, but I don't remember. I
guess there's some reason that makes sense over there, but it sounds like, why don't we, instead of Metro, like, it's a train. It's the Metro, Metropolitan. We don't call it, like, Chowder cards for no reason.
I think it was a company.
It's a brand, that's why.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I guess it's no sillier than Google or Yahoo.
Correct. I did like Ruby. She seemed very smart to me. She was saying, you know, trees either have, you know, nuts or blossoms, and this one has both. That's weird. This branch has no rings.
Yeah.
You know, and
so, she's also the one that pointed out the red ring.
Yes. So I was like, yay, I liked her. It's like, that's what I mean. The kids were smart and bringing in information, which is nice.
Yeah, nothing really felt superfluous in this episode that I can think of.
Yeah, the only objection I had was the doctor saying you didn't have time to go watch Les Mis. I was like, hey, that's a great musical. Don't go sits in that.
Yes.
No.
I did find that funny, even though I kind of don't agree with him, but because I'll set it up where Clara's calling the doctor after she gets out of the museum to tell him about the amazing tree growth, that she goes, you show me things, I want to show you something amazing. And then when he goes, well, there are some things that I've never seen. That's usually because I've chosen not to see them. Even my incredibly long life is too short for Les Miserables.
Oh, it was funny. I laughed. But it was
funny.
Like, hey,
yeah,
it's funny. Yeah.
Back to like the doctor and Clara talking. The doctor tells her that she's missing Maeve and Clara doesn't even know. And then she's saying to bring Maeve to them. And then that's where I like this line. His response was, I'm a Time Lord, not a child minder.
Right. It's also strange that if Maeve needs the medication and be extra watched, that neither one of them knew she wasn't there. That just did not seem like either character.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, nothing's happened. They would know when they wake up, they need to give medication, what's going on. It's just, you would watch, you're supposed to watch this child more than the others. And both of those are enough to know that that was, no, we have to watch that. We have to check and see how she is in the morning. It just seems so out of place.
And why did she take off? Like, why did she, like, once she was with everybody and the kids got there? Because the kids, like, she was gone, but, like, the kids showed up and she was already gone.
The things in her head, the noises and the voices.
That's what I was going to say, because we don't see what happens.
Or telling her to go somewhere, do something.
They were telling her to go somewhere?
That's why I explained it away, yeah.
But they never really said where... They were telling her to go. She just sort of like ran.
The doctor. She.
No, it's after that. When they all got together.
After that.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I took it as the voices.
Yeah, and then she sees the firemen or whatever they are. But they never really say where it told her to go. Like when they're following her, you know, her trail. But never was it said like where she was even going.
I think she just gets confused and runs. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Almost like Jamie Summers and the Bionic Woman.
Yeah. Is this where they're like chased by the wolves? Well, when Maeve is running away, there's a shot where there's animals hiding in the bushes, and I don't know about you, but those eyes look like panther eyes to me, but then they turn out to be wolves.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
And then the wolves run away from a bigger animal, and I was like, oh, the panthers that I saw. And they're like, no, it's a tiger.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to put the wolves in shadow. At first, I thought they were just black wolves, because those exist. But then when they came to light, they weren't. And I was like, yeah, it's just kind of bad.
That was a really neat shot with Maeve and like how it went to her one side and racked focus to the bush. And then eyes appeared and then back to Maeve and then back to the other side, racked focus. It was really neat. But yeah, it was probably a different company or somebody working on that than working on the actual physical, or not physical, but computer wolves, full-bodied wolves.
I think the whole reason for having the animals there was to have Danny save the day at one point, you know, to have him show himself as a capable.
Well, this is a scene that I think I needed earlier on to see why Clara is attracted to Danny, like the good qualities of Danny. Like the one I'm going to bring up is when he's taking charge of the kids about getting them to their parents' houses. That's where like the military part of him kicks in. He's like, let's go. We're going to be like a unit. We're going to be a team. We're going to get through this forest. Like that's there's like map reading skills and wayfinding skills that I think he has developed from being a soldier. So he knows how to get through a place that is sort of unfamiliar, but he knows where it is. And then his concern is the kids. And then she's like, that is a very attractive quality.
Yes.
Like, I was like, that's something that we didn't see in the date. We saw that they were going on dates, but we didn't see like what made her keep going on dates with him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think this is something I needed.
And he also doesn't get overwhelmed by the kids. A lot of people kind of get, you know, lose their patience, even if they're good about it. Like he's always even keeled with them, no matter how maddening they may be.
Yeah, and that's why I like that little moment.
I didn't understand where the homework came from. The homework binders.
Clara had brought those in previous to this entire episode just to work on correcting their homework left them in there. And then having Danny find them later is like, you've been in the TARDIS.
Okay, that makes sense because at the end, Danny is saying, you need to work on your markings.
Right.
And I think it's saying grading for us.
Right. Yes, yeah. That's yes, they're marked. Yes.
Okay.
She needs to work on the homework, and also they dated the homework. So he knows that it's been in there a while.
They didn't spell it out. Whatever.
To the overall arc, in the previous episode at the beginning, if you remember, Clara was grabbing everything from the TARDIS because she didn't want to leave anything there. Right. So again, this is like two people getting a similar assignment and coming up with two different responses, right? Like, so one writer had Clara making sure not even a toothbrush was left behind. The next writer, or I don't know if however it worked out, is like, oh, she left all of her actual work in the middle of the console room. Like, so again, it's like something that you don't realize, I think, unless you watch them as we are watching them critically. But I think if you were there real time, like it would affect the characters because they're no longer seeming true because they just fit whatever situation. And yeah, well, the whole homework thing was weird.
I like the Hansel and Gretel aspect of it, and then I like the Red Riding Hood giving her the red jacket. That's why I thought her wolves from the whole time. Red Riding Hood and the wolf.
You know,
that she started leaving the trail was a good idea, but you don't start with your phone. They're tracking the phone.
Yeah, that she would have been smarter than that.
And then the second thing was like a pencil case, like take a pencil out. Yeah.
Well, you would miss a pencil as things were growing around.
True.
It.
That's true. That's
you wanted something big enough, bright enough.
But it seemed like she was emptying her knapsack pretty darn fast.
Yeah, I'm just saying that there's stuff in the pencil case that you don't need to drop the whole thing that has other crumbs in it.
Whatever.
I would just like to say that Ender is now very much in a deep dream, and I think he's running through the forest. It's quite adorable.
You ever see the video of the dog doing that, like running in his sleep, and then he kind of wakes up and runs right into a wall?
No.
Yeah. I did feel that her shooing away the voices in her head, I don't feel like she did a very good job of it, acting-wise, but I found it so adorable that I just didn't care.
I mean, I thought of the same thing, but I'm like, it's a child actor.
Yeah.
They gave her a direction and she interpreted it the way she interpreted.
Yeah, it was so, I found it to be so charming. So I was like, I said, why didn't they correct her and tell her to be more like this? I was like, you know what? Maybe that's the best she could do, or it's just so cute that they just left it.
Yeah. And then you mentioned this earlier, Josh, but Maeve runs into the government guys doing the flame throwing of the trying to do whatever. And then they mentioned that they're Cobra. And I'm like, no, Cobra's the bad guys.
Right, I know. Like, Cobra, what does that stand for?
By the way, can I be on the team that always uses flamethrowers? Because that'd be a fun job.
Most of the fire effects are really good. And then when it was disappearing, you know, not catching on fire, looked a little, but most of it, I really like the fire.
Yeah, they did a good job on those.
Can we talk a little, I don't know if you want to talk about this later or not, but location-wise, was this all a set? or were they somewhere that was foresty?
They did go to a forest in Newport, they said. The Fowler Woods. So yes, they did go on location.
That's interesting. Is there, to a certain extent, some of it does look fake.
Yeah.
But, not bad, just like, you know.
So. There's, okay, so they went into a forest for a location, and then they added like the little hallmarks that would be reminiscent of London, like the base of the statue with the lion,
right.
The signs of the underground. And then they wanted to get like a double-decker red bus, but they couldn't get that. It was a bit too much. So what they did is they printed out a big printout, and then they hid it in the back. And on camera, you don't even bat an eye that the bus isn't there.
Wow. They did a good job.
Yeah, it was great.
So there's some great lines with Danny and Clara and the kids trying to understand what relationships are. Like, I thought they were supposed to be in love. Why are they shouting? Yeah. And then I think Ruby ends up shouting at the boy that asked that question, like, kind of, you know, being that middle
Samson?
School.
Samson.
Yeah. That middle school puppy love, like, kind of, mm-hmm. you know, pulling the hair of the person you like.
Right.
It was fun.
Going back to Maeve, when the doctor is trying to figure out what's going on, like, this is an invasion. You need to communicate, coordinate to make an invasion. And Maeve goes, you don't need a phone to communicate. I haven't phoned home, and I know my mom is worried about me. I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's really that's good.
That was really great.
I liked, Eugene, how, like, Maeve's line to the doctor there connected to the doctor's lines later. Mm-hmm. When he was like, how do you reason with trees? You can't. He says a lot of stuff, but I picked out, you can't lie to trees,
yeah.
as a nice line fitting like the doctor this season.
I even like that it's consistent that the sonic screwdriver doesn't work on wood. And so
yes,
this is going to be, this is going to be a great mystery for the doctor, because nothing he has is going to work.
that was great.
Like, no circuits, no nothing.
And I like how it was turning out. I mean, I think last episode was good. I think this episode's good. But it's sort of in the same vein of, it's using something practical that we are all familiar with and we can relate to, you know, trees and foliage. And he's misinterpreting the intention. It's basically a flip-flop.
Yeah.
You know, in the last episode, he thought they were good, could possibly be good. And they're just trying to talk and misunderstood. In this episode, he's assuming that it's an attack. So I think that's why I like these two episodes. I don't know, might be a bit of a criticism if I'm going to be overly critical, that they just did the same story and flopped it. But but I like it. I think, you know, I love stories that make us look at something we know about from a different perspective, going all the way back to the Weeping Angels until they screwed that up. But yeah,
And so, speaking of the funny lenses, or the use of the lens to accentuate comedy when the kids enter into the TARDIS console room. Mm-hmm. I just, it's funny to see Peter Capaldi reacting. It's like, he almost wanted to say, get off my lawn type of thing.
Yeah. Well, they were pushing all the buttons and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I was even like, don't do that.
And then when they realize that Maeve didn't come on board and she's still running out in the forest,
right,
he goes like, to each kid. And it's like hilarious. doctor even compares this solar flare to the one that hit the bank of Karabraxos from Time Heist.
Yeah, that was nice.
I also like when he talked about the Tunguska blast and one of the other ones. Like,
the Brazilian one, I think.
Yeah, right. It was in Brazil. I like it, bringing it into knowledge that we have makes it seem legitimate.
What about the events that the doctor references? Those real events?
Yes.
Yeah.
Happened to Earth.
The Tunguska blast or event was in Russia, and there was a forest that was kind of leveled, I believe. This was in the past, so nobody had like cameras or any surveillance footage or just.
But it was also in Siberia. There was no one there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at. There was nobody there either to have eyewitness accounts of what happened. So it was just a mystery.
Was that? 1906.
1908 is what the episode.
Okay. And then the one in South America is Curuca. Again, a forest.
There's just one in New Jersey.
It was an asteroid strike that was really bad and was luckily not near any living people.
Yeah. The Tunguska blast is referenced a lot in movies and TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But they did finally get photographs of the area, and it's just laid waste. It's just everything.
Of which, Tunguska?
Tunguska, yeah.
Well, it's I mean, hasn't there been photos for a long time since they had air photos? Is it radioactive or something?
What?
Tunguska.
Yeah, I wasn't saying anything like that. I was just saying that no one was there, and then later they sent cameras out to photograph it, and so you can see that it looks like hell.
Right. And something you said made it sound like they just did that, but I just misheard you. Yeah, yeah. It's just this huge crater with trees.
Like they look like crop circles.
Yeah.
The Brazilian one was in 1930.
No evidence of things like that happened before.
I'm sure they happened. We just haven't had documentation of them.
Like the goon stuff.
There's that big crater out west.
Crater Lake.
Yeah, I think those are just recent events where there was people around and then recount what it how it affected the local life. Like obviously there's tons of craters all over the world, but they were so old that you can't tell how they would have affected the flora and fauna.
Oh, and sorry, I missed this one. But when they're talking about, or the kids are just running around, and then Samson goes like, "What are these round bits for?" And it's like, usually the doctor's like, "I miss the round bits," and then somebody else is commenting on them, and then he shoes them or shepherds them into the lower level of the console.
Yes. Yeah.
And then he's like, "Haven't you been struck by the fact that look, it's bigger on the inside?" Like, it's funny that he's the one saying it. And then Ruby's comment on that is, "There wasn't a forest. Then there was a forest. Yeah. Nothing surprises us anymore." I was like, that's a great line to give to a kid.
Yeah.
It's also a sad line because that's so true to many of the kids now.
Yeah.
We've seen so much.
Mm-hmm. Way to kill the vibe, Frank.
You're welcome.
The doctor asks Maeve how she knew about the TARDIS before they even met, but gets no answer. He realizes that the forest is communicating with her, and she says she did this just by thinking of it. A group of alien fireflies appeared around her. The doctor asks why they created the solar flare. They reply that they are immortal and they will outlive the human race. Clara tells the doctor they have to use the TARDIS to save at least some of the human race, but not the kids, because all they'll want are their families. Not Danny, because he won't leave the kids. She doesn't want to be saved either, because she doesn't want to be the last of her kind. Confused, the doctor asks why she suggested saving people in the TARDIS. She replies, so she can save him by getting him back to the TARDIS. He leaves, but keeps wondering about trees that don't burn. And like that, he realizes he was wrong. The trees aren't causing the solar flare. The trees are protecting the Earth from it. They are creating extra oxygen that will act as a shield. Maeve and the kids call every phone on Earth, telling everyone to leave the trees alone. Maeve's mom shows up and they are happy to see each other. Danny explains to Clara that he doesn't need to see solar flares, aliens, or entire universes. He is very happy to see what is surprising here on Earth. He also knows that she's been on the TARDIS and just wants the truth. In space, the doctor and Clara watch the flare strike the Earth harmlessly. Missy, who's watching from somewhere else, is surprised things happen that way. With its mission accomplished, the forest disappears and Maeve's missing sister shows up. That was too convenient.
Okay, maybe it's simpler than I'm thinking, maybe, but like, what's the story there?
Extremely bad writing.
Yeah.
She's a teenager. She ran away.
A year ago.
A year ago? and came, and not just came out of the hydrangea bush, came out of the alien fireflies.
Yeah.
Infuriated me.
All right. I thought I was missing something.
No.
What I think would have been better is them just cutting the three useless lines before about the sister being missing and just not have there be a sister. Because, God, that was stupid.
I think, yeah. Okay, we agree. We agree.
There must have been something longer with the sister, the storyline. And they kept editing it down, but they should have cut it.
Yeah, there may be that. It also could have been the powers that be didn't want kids. Because I remember hearing, oh, we had a problem on our show where one of the kids was taken by the bad guy. And the other kids go save him. And it was like, we can't make it seem like a kidnapping because that'll make kids afraid of kidnapping.
Correct.
And, you know, our argument was, well, if you show them you may be kidnapped, that may teach them not to talk to strangers who seem like they may kidnap you. You know, it's
like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody wants, there's no learning. You know, the only learning is to just, everything's fine. So it could have been something like that, where it's just like, well, we need the sister to come in at the end. Well, that doesn't make sense. Just have her come in at the end. Have her revealed by a bush in front of their apartment. If that's what you want, that's what we'll do.
Horrible. Terrible.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows?
But, I also want to say before we go on, creating extra oxygen in the atmosphere isn't going to shield the Earth. You're just going to make it a much, much bigger bomb.
Yeah. Look,
that just burns off. It's okay. Don't, yeah, it just burns off.
Yeah.
Is that what they, did they specifically say that? Because I, once they mentioned oxygen and all that stuff, that they control the amount of oxygen, I was like, oh yeah, they can just hold back the oxygen and produce more carbon dioxide. Well, carbon,
no, they produce more oxygen so that when the flare hits, it would burn up that oxygen, not the oxygen people were breathing.
It's brand new oxygen.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It's okay. This is the thought behind it, I think.
It's a bomb.
I'm pulling a Frank. Is that they put all the oxygen out there into the upper atmosphere. And then, like the doctor said, they all held their breath. So all the oxygen was on the outside. And then the inside, they all held their breath, keeping some of the oxygen for the humans. But there's that level, you know, that had no oxygen. So just burn the outer oxygen and moved on. And then they all did a sigh of relief and all this oxygen came back out.
Well, a sigh of relief releases carbon dioxide.
No, from the
trees. No, the trees. The trees held their breath.
I get it.
I mean, it's just, you know, elementary. That's what happened. There are two episodes going on. There's the adult scientific, this leads to this, which doesn't work, which we all have issues with. And I think the second episode that we're seeing is the relationship of the doctor, Clara, and Danny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that scene that Clara did going, you know, we can't save everyone. Let's just save who we can. Was not including the people that are there. It was the doctor. She had that from the beginning. I liked that line and seeing what she meant by it was, no, I had to get you safe. The kids, they can't live without their parents. We can't take, you know, can we go get all the parents? She was just thinking practically, going, Danny's not leaving the kids. The kids aren't leaving their parents. I'm not leaving Danny. And so I don't want to be the last one. It's you. It's your time to keep going.
I don't know. I think there would have been a kid or two saying, no, I can leave my parents if I live.
And I just really liked how it was written, how it was acted. I thought it was really good. I also liked how Danny was saying, I want to see the things in front of me more clearly. He was more in the moment, which was really great. Going, no,
that was great.
You don't have to go off to have a full life. You don't have to, you know, even on this planet, you don't have to go to other countries. You don't have to do other things. You can be in the present and see the wonders that are just around us.
Yeah, and I thought it was really great.
I thought Danny was great in this episode. How he
did
the kids, taking over, doing the march to get them going. It just really highlighted Danny, I think, a lot. Yeah.
And even that marching chant where in the beginning he's like, team, let's go. And he's like, we're not a team. And then by the end of the episode, they're chanting together in that marching. And like what Josh, you mentioned about like the flip-flopping of these two episodes as far as like structure-wise. Like in the last episode, Flatline, we had Riggsy wanting to sacrifice himself on the train, and he doesn't need to, essentially. Same thing here with Clara doing it. She's willing to sacrifice herself to get the doctor to live. So it's like it is kind of the same structure, just flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just really enjoyed that. Oh, and the other thing that flipped for me is that when Clara got mad at the doctor in, oh boy, I can't remember which one it was. We did a couple weeks ago, or a couple episodes ago.
Oh, with the moon.
Yeah, kill the moon. There we go. Thank you. She says, or he's saying that this is your decision. And then, like, why can't you help us with this decision? And then, go ahead, Frank. You want to say the lines?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
And then he responds with, "This is my world too. I walk your earth. I breathe your air," which is the same thing that she spout back at him for being inactive in that decision.
Yes, I love that. It's so good. I remember her saying that, going, "No, doctor, shut up. You walk with us. You breathe our air." It's like, I love that callback without really putting the, you know, pin on it or anything.
Yeah.
But it's just like, oh my gosh, we just saw that. That's perfect. I love that.
So good.
I took it as he knew that, but this was a moment in Kill the Moon that he couldn't be part of. This is a moment that they're going to decide, and he knows he's going to decide a certain way. He knows they're going to do it just by instinct or knowing the people that they're going to do the right thing, because he is invested in this planet.
Yeah.
So to me, that was more of just him lying at the other time, saying, no, you know, you have to do it. And she was all upset because she knew the truth that what she said, which was the truth, and he's confirming it in this, just that he was not able to make that decision. He had to do it so the people of the earth would learn, because they all said no. Mm-hmm. And then this thing happened, and they needed to learn that lesson. I loved having that same wording brought back a few episodes later that I didn't pick up before, but going through this now without the time in between watching all of them that we had back then, it was just, oh, I loved it. I thought it was beautiful. I loved it.
and what I like about it is that it's two different authors or writers that are doing Kill the Moon is a different writer, and then In the Forest of the Night is a different writer. So what we complained about earlier, where one writer had a note of make sure Clara gets everything off of the TARDIS, doesn't leave anything behind. And then in this episode, in Forest of the Night, she left something behind. Where this one, they're referencing something that is just a couple episodes ago instead of the last episode. So I feel like I want more of that kind of tight, just that synergy of everybody working together for a common story arc in the season.
I agree with you. The reality of it is they won't be able to do that.
I know.
You know, so I agree with you, but when it does happen and I'm able to catch it, I just smile.
Yeah.
I did like that they let Maeve make the announcement to the world when he's trying to do that. And that they had just that one little scene that I thought was so great when they're on the floor to write it and all the other kids are around. It just was, I don't know, I thought that was endearing. That's where you'd go. There's no place to really write. You get on the floor, you'd write it. Other people are saying how to write, what to say. And it just was a great team effort. And
it was very heartwarming. It was good, because it could have gone a different way where they argued about what to say, but instead they were very united in what they were going to let Maeve say. Yeah, that was good. It was also well done from the actress, just reading it simply.
And she invited Annabelle to come home, so that's why she made her way home.
Yeah, she thought about it.
Oh. All right.
I won't be running away anymore. Yeah.
So it's almost like Annabelle flat out ran away. No mystery. Right. Yeah, okay. I didn't catch that earlier.
Well, okay, so the hydrangea bush wasn't real. It was actually a cell phone tower, and she just tapped into it.
No, that's actually what 5G looks like. It's a kidnapper. So the conspiracy theorists were right. 5G is something to be feared.
Like all the other foliage had already dissipated, but there's this one holdout bush.
How I saw it, because she said the neighbors had put that in, or the mom did, was that it was the aliens who were tied into Maeve. She was able to hear them on some level. So somehow they're the ones who brought back Annabelle and gave her back Annabelle. It just was weird that there are the trees, she was in the bush. It seemed like she was somehow, I don't know what happened to her, if they wanted to go sad and she really did die or whatever, and they brought her back. That's why it's like they should have just cut that whole Annabelle section.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, they could have saved it by when she was talking to everyone on the planet in English. They could have had shots of people, and that girl could have been one of the people.
The TARDIS translates, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, very good. Very good. Thank you.
Can I do my theory now?
Sure.
All right, so my theory is Annabelle, this runaway teenager, comes home. She sees the bush. She's a weird teenager, so she decides to sit inside the bush because she's a teenager. And the aliens have heard how much the mom hates the bush, and they decided to give the mom a little gift by getting rid of the bush while at the same time revealing Annabelle. That's my theory.
Sounds solid.
Okay.
I think she ran away to Bristol for a year, and then like when all the people started disappearing there, she was like, oh, I should make it back home.
Yeah.
It's better than anything written in this episode.
Hey, that's a little harsh.
Mm.
So some of the dialogue was good.
I brought up, I've been able to glean goodness out of this episode.
What was the doctor's line? Oh, you made an excellent episode, but there was no goodness in it.
Not quite. That was last episode.
Yeah.
I like that. Good callback.
I mean, I going back to what Danny says about saying he doesn't want to see new things, but clearly see things in front of him. I like his line, one person is more amazing, harder to understand, but more amazing than universes. And it just reminds me of the one person is more important, is the most important thing in all of creation, the universe, that the Russell era was kind of focusing on.
Yeah, that Danny line was great.
So a solar flare isn't this isn't the first time we've had something like this affect the human race. When we did the Fourth Doctor's The Ark in Space, that was part of why the human race had to leave Earth. And then in The Beast Below, there was a solar flare in there as well. Then there was one, they had to relocate the Time Lords in The Mysterious Planet. And that one I have never seen. And I think it's with the Sixth Doctor. Yes, Sixth Doctor.
You know, we're not supposed to know too much about the aliens. They're just a,
right,
you know, savior thing that comes up. I want to know more. Are they just for this planet? Where do they come from?
Oh, the aliens in this episode. Yeah. I thought you were talking about in general, like in life.
Yeah, that's right. I think they're inhabitants of the Earth for, you know, millions and millions of years.
They seem kind of like the Force.
Yeah, they are Earthlings.
Yeah. It just was, you know, you want more because we know how the Earth was supposed to be just for the Rachnox and stuff. So it's like, where do they come from? Why are they protecting it? Do they protect the planet? Does it matter about the humans? Because there are other life forms on the planet. It's just one of those, we're going to be here long after you. So it's not just because of humans.
Right. So well, they probably protected the race you just mentioned before.
Would they be on other planets? It's just sort of, how do other planets get destroyed? It's just sort of going, you know, what is this? I wanted to get more in depth to it, even though I know it's not supposed to be in depth.
They didn't protect the dinosaurs or what are the reptile people?
Silurians.
The Silurians, yeah.
But they protected the Earth, because that was also meteors, not solar flares. So are they just doing solar flares? Is that that's what they can do because of their plant?
We got the solar flare warranty, but we didn't get that asteroid warranty.
Right.
The asteroid insurance.
You're not covered for that. We'll protect you from the solar flares.
Maybe the first time that it happened, they didn't know that was going to happen. They're like, oh, maybe we should not let that happen again.
Add that to the list of things to stop.
That was pretty bad. Maybe we should have done something. All right.
What do they say they are? Just how do they announce themselves? We are
the grass that grows between the stones and over mass graves.
Oh, okay, so they didn't name themselves. Okay.
It's Mother Nature.
It's not nice to mess with Mother Nature.
I will say I like this better than The Happening, where
it's like the opposite.
It's the opposite, where they're benevolent instead of malevolent.
Do you like it better than What's Happening?
There's their first edit.
Yes, but it's not as good as What's Happening Now.
Okay.
The quality went down.
Well, just knowing it more now, I guess because when you're watching it, you forgot so much about last season as well, where she got the phone number for the doctor from a woman in the shop. You know, you can't tie all that together. That's one thing, having such a stretch of time. It's like, how am I supposed to remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what the reference was. Oh, yeah. No, did not get that.
Yeah. It's only because we watched it and we talked about it, you know, with Eugene and stuff. So we've seen it before. Yeah. And we try to lay it down in this podcast going, remember this. Because
and now here it is. It
like everybody.
I'm like, really? Why did you pay that off here? I'm not gonna know that. Abigail Eames plays Maeve. Jaden Harris Wallace plays Samson. He's the guy with the New York Yankees hat. Ashley Foster plays Bradley. He is the one with the nut allergy.
And anger management issues.
Harley Bird plays Ruby. She's the redhead that can't find X or is asked to find X and doesn't understand. She is the voice of Peppa Pig for those kids out there.
Oh, wow.
Siwan Morris plays Mabe's mom. Harry Dickman plays George, the museum watchman. James Weber Brown plays the minister. I think he's the one on the TV. Michelle Asante plays the neighbor of Mabe's mom. Curtis Flowers is one of the emergency services officers. Jenny Hill plays herself. She is a British news reporter and television journalist. She's on one of the those things where it's going around the different TV stations montage thing. Then Kate Tideman plays the Paris reporter in that montage. She is a chef on the murder on the Orient Express, the Kenneth Branagh movie. Nana Amu Gottfried plays the Ikara reporter, the guy, I can't remember what he's saying, but he's saying something funny. I just remember laughing at what he says. Eloise Barnes plays Annabelle, Maeve's lost sister. I looked her up, even though she has no lines, she was in this episode. She was in a movie with Jodie Whittaker and Dougherty Scott called A Thousand Kisses Deep. And the writer of this movie, Frank Cottrell Boyce, he wrote Millions, which is my favorite of Danny Boyle's movies. The one with the currency in the UK switching over from pounds to euros.
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
Yeah, you don't think of Danny Boyle and think of a kids movie.
Right. He did another one that was quite like universally accessible. Anyway, that's another conversation.
That's for our other podcast.
Yes.
Anywho. All right. So
we get it, Eugene. That was good.
So in the forest of the night, who is this episode good for? Or more specifically, this episode is good for who? A new viewer, a casual viewer, a fan of the show, or a diehard?
I dislike this episode intensely on every level. So diehard. I hate everything about this episode.
I feel the opposite.
I don't. Everybody's going to feel the opposite. I just despise it.
That's fine. I don't love everything about this episode, but I think it's just consistent and nice. I'm going to say new for the same reasons last episode that I said, where this, you get enough of the doctor, you get enough of the companions, the kids are fun. I think for someone who's not, this might even be better for someone who's not sure if they're going to even like Doctor Who, because it is very light. There's nothing super intense about it. My only real criticism is what we were just talking about, where that's not how oxygen and flames work. And then, of course, the sister at the end. But I think it's just a very accessible episode and has enough of what we like to give someone a taste.
I think, you know, going off of last episode's feelings a little bit, I feel like if this had been earlier in the season where you got to meet Danny, if these had been the only students that we had, and instead of Courtney, you had Ruby coming back, and maybe like Mabe has also gotten better as the season has gone, I could consider it higher. But because it's now, and to me, it hasn't really pushed forward like the series arc or... I also did find it like in addition to claustrophobic, I felt everything was a little cheap, and I don't know if that why that is, but it just felt like, you know, everything was a little bit too close and not open like I'm used to with like science fiction or with Doctor Who. All that said, I think I'm going to put it with a fan. So not like, again, this was the first time, like, I don't think I watched this when it was live airing.
Oh, okay.
And I enjoyed it. Like, I'm not saying that it wasn't enjoyable, but yeah, just like it doesn't do enough for me to introduce like the Doctor or show the Doctor in a very Doctor, like Doctor Who typical way, or with some like twists and turns. So yeah, I don't know. I don't think I need to go back to visit this episode again for like relationships. I guess that has some good dialogue, but yeah, it's not one I was like, oh, I can't believe I've never seen this. Like, it was okay. Like, I enjoyed it, but it's not, it wasn't like, oh, I can't believe I missed this great gem. Like, I was just like, oh, okay, yeah.
I really do not feel strongly about where to place this. I don't know if I think it's a bad episode. It's just kind of like I don't have any strong feelings about it episode. So I'm gonna put this in fan, but for not good reasons. More like no one needs to watch this again unless they're on a podcast. And want to watch it again and use our podcast as a companion piece. So I'm going to say fan.
I did look it up on IMDb. Like, these kids don't come back, do they? Like,
they don't.
Okay. No. So we don't. Yeah. So again, I'm affirmed in my position. Like, if they had been earlier, yeah, and then throughout the season, even mm-hmm. better. But now it's like, why do I care about them? So yeah.
Yeah.
Same with Brian when I first watched it, hating this episode because it just made no sense. These creatures coming out of nowhere to save us with oxygen that was supposed to burn off. And it just made no sense that the trees could just grow overnight. You know, it just did not like it. It was all that practical idea of what they've usually set Doctor Who in some kind of reality. And this, they seem to change all that for this one episode. I've only seen it the once when it first aired. I never wanted to go back to it. I was very pleasantly surprised, like I said earlier, that there are two episodes in this. One episode I hate and one episode I like. Mm-hmm. And it was the character development, the interaction, the writing of making Danny somebody with integrity, somebody looking after the kids, Clara realizing that again because she is so involved with the Doctor, the whole that story of the Doctor going, you have lied to me, and Danny saying, you've lied because I know that you've been on the TARDIS. That story aspect and having kids who are smart but still being kids, I thought was great. I really liked that because it wasn't that they had to be so obnoxious as other ones that they've written. And that's the reason I'm going to put it in Die Hard, because I can both hate and like this episode for different reasons. And I don't think if you only watch it once, you're going to get that other aspect of like. So
yeah,
that's why I just thought it was very much Die Hard, because I can see the good parts of it in a bad episode.
I'm sorry. There is one thing that I have to say. I'm sorry. If you took every series regular character out of this episode, it would still happen exactly the same way. They do nothing to contribute mm-hmm. to the plot at all.
Right.
In any way.
Yeah.
Shape or form.
That is very true.
And but also for me, there's nothing for me, the character stuff just doesn't cover it. Doesn't make it okay.
Oh, I get that. That's why I put it in Die Hard, because you would have to have that option to like it or dislike it. The other ones seem like they would like it because it's a Doctor Who episode that's done pretty well in some aspect. And this one overall, I just still remember. Even now, it's like, I don't go back to watch it, except when I look at my notes and go, oh yeah, they did have some great parts in it. It was just so overshadowed in my mind by all the negativity that was going, what is this? What are they doing?
Anyway, sorry, Eugene.
It's okay. That's what this is about. Oh man, for me, like very similar to some people here, that this was my second time or third time watching this, because I've only seen it on the live broadcast. It's not one that I remember fondly, but revisiting it this week, I was pleasantly surprised as well. I was kind of shocked that I missed some of these moments and these good lines. I don't know who said this, but I think that this should have come a little early. Like, the character stuff should have come earlier. Why is Clara attracted to Danny and wants to continue dating Danny? And even in Flatline, when she's running away from escaping with that swinging chair, trying to tell Danny not to worry about her, she runs away with like a hop, skip, and a jump and says, "I love you," as she hangs up on him. So it's like, why does she love Danny? And then this is something that I could have used earlier on in the season. Having the surrogate audience in the episode, I think, is great. I like that it reminds me of a Star Trek episode, and that the so-called villain is not really malevolent in any way, shape, or form. It's just misunderstood. But see, it's like, revisiting it, I can see why it can be used for a new viewer. But then if I've never rewatched it and you just polled me 2 weeks ago, I would say Die Hard. So I'm going to have to go somewhere in between and say a fan, because me as a fan, I had to revisit it. So that wraps up In the Forest of the Night. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time when the future becomes the present. I should have said In the Forest of the Night grew on me.
Oh, no.
You missed it.
You just listened to an episode of Who Knew?
Our wonderful theme music is by Michael Grady.
Find him on Facebook at The Universe Explodes.
Additional music is by Damiel Paggio.
All our episodes are engineered by Auburn, and you can find him at auburnbinkley.com.
You can also find this show in several places.
Follow us on Twitter at Who Knew Podcast.
Subscribe, review, and listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
Or on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/WhoKnewPodcast.
All our episodes are on WhoKnewPodcast.com.
Visit our Facebook page.
Please leave comments, reviews, and click like to support Who Knew Podcast.
To listen to our show on your Amazon Echo device, subscribe to us on Amazon Music.
And then ask your Amazon device to play your podcast subscriptions.
This podcast is inspired by Doctor Who,
the longest-running sci-fi show in history.
And especially the revival spearheaded by Russell T. Davis.
Thanks to Russell, Sidney Newman,
Verity Lambert, Ron Grainer,
and all those involved in the adventures of our favorite Time Lord.
Your work continues to inspire and entertain.